Hello, welcome to Holden Village. Today is Monday, August 20th, 2001. In the Creekside Room this evening is Catherine Cummings Bond. Today's session number is CUC 2001-01, and it's titled Woman of Strength and Courage, Helen Keller. Let's listen in.
Hello, kids up there. Before I begin telling Helen Keller, I think more people are coming, I want to just talk a little bit about her. She traveled the world, and she spoke all over, and she wrote, as you well know. But oftentimes when I do this, I meet someone who once met her. Did anyone ever get to meet Helen Keller or see her? Many times I've had people say, I met her in the airport, or I saw her wherever. So it's interesting to hear.
When did she die?
1968 at age 88. And you will learn all this. I will give you all those great dates. But this is called a shalwar kameez, and it is an outfit from a woman from Bangladesh, and she did much world traveling. So this is something she might wear. What was interesting about Helen is that she always looked fabulous, because she said, although I cannot see, I think all the eyes might be on me, meaning that people be watching her. So she often wore beautiful things, and you'll see, take the time to look at, this is Helen as a child, a beautiful young child and a young girl. This is Helen at college here, and you'll hear all about that. And here's Helen as an adult. And if you could concentrate, think about the 80-year-olds you know, and look at that woman's face. She is as full of life as any person I have ever seen. And although she can't see or hear, it is just an amazing picture. And the one here, if she really knew you well and felt like she could, she would touch your face. And she was quite close to Eleanor Roosevelt. They were good buddies. And so there she is touching Eleanor Roosevelt's face. A personal note is that before I begin Helen, that when I was in third grade, my life was changed because I got to hear the story of Helen Keller. And you know how when you're in school, some of those things, just a key turns and you just go, wow. And I will never forget watching the black and white movie in third grade of Helen Keller. And when she finally felt water and she got it, you know, when she understood, that was for me the moment where I think something turned inside me at age 8. Are you 8 in third grade? Something turned that said, I can do anything. And what I love about these women that I'm going to do this week is, I don't think they just tell a story of one woman. What they do is they empower us to be anything that we are meant to be. So I don't know what God might be kind of pulling you to do and be at any age. But I do think these women unleash that in all of us. Alrighty. Oh, one final note. Helen Keller was not blind. She had eyes to see more than most of us will ever see in all of our lives. My name is Helen Keller. Many have summarized my life by saying that I was doubly handicapped. But if you were to ask me how I felt about my life, I felt my life was blessed. Richly blessed. Let me tell you why. I was the firstborn to Kate and Arthur Keller on June 27, 1880, in Tuscumbia, Alabama. My father was a Confederate captain in the Confederate Army and was 20 years older than my mother. Now, my early childhood memories are so dark, and they're filled with deep and profound frustration. It often found its way into rage in my life because I was both blind and deaf, I could not make any sense of my life. No one could communicate with me, and the world outside me seemed to be filled with people so different than myself. I suppose that I appeared like a wild animal to many. I had developed a crude system of symbols for functioning in my world, and my poor parents, you can imagine, were at their wits' end. They let me behave like an animal sometimes, punctuated with many outbursts of anger and frustration and fits of rage, because I was being held captive in a prison of dark silence. And the darkness and the silence were extinguishing my spirit. To illustrate my frustration and my despair, once I had a baby sister named Mildred. And after she was born, I was angry and I wanted my mother back to myself again. So I just threw Mildred on the floor and I almost hurt the wee baby. My parents took me to several specialists to see if they could help me. One suggestion proved to be very important. They said, why not take Helen to a man named Alexander Graham Bell, who lived in Washington, D.C.? Well, you know Bell probably for his invention of the telephone. But what he was really trying to do was he was trying to help teach deaf children how to speak. Kids like me. And that's how the telephone got invented. When I was 5 years old, my father took me to Washington, D.C., and Dr. Bell invited us to have dinner at his home. It was Alexander Graham Bell who opened a door for my bewildered parents. He encouraged my folks to send to Boston, to a school there called the Boston School for the Blind, and to ask about a suitable teacher that would be right for me, which is exactly what my parents did immediately the next day. The letter finally arrived back to us in Alabama with great news. A teacher would be sent who was exceedingly intelligent, honest, industrious, and ladylike in her mannerisms. Thank goodness for that. This person would prove to be the most important person in my life. She became my beloved teacher, and her name was Annie Sullivan. Now, Annie was not born into a family with money, as I was. She was abandoned by her own parents when she was 9 years old, and she was sent to a state poorhouse along with her little brother and her sister. Think about it. She lived with folks in society that everyone rejected, the alcoholics and orphans, the elderly and the insane. Later, I remember that Annie told me about her playmates sometimes being the rats that would lurk in the corners. Annie was nearly blind herself and unable to read until she was in her teen years. So she understood what it was like for a child to have a dark childhood as I did. Annie was only 21 years of age when she came to our home. And I'll tell you what, I did not like her, not one little bit in the beginning. And this is why. She made me behave. And my parents just didn't. One breakfast meal, I was walking around the table doing what I always did. I would feel for food, and if food on someone's plate, if it felt good, I just would put it in my pocket. So I would go, oh, that felt good, and put it in my pocket. Well, I got to her plate, and I was feeling around it, and I heard a slap, slap, on right on my hands. Well, I became outraged, and I began just doing this to her. Next thing I knew, there was a lot of commotion, and I felt around for my mom, and for my dad, and for my brother, and my sister, and they were all gone, and the door was locked. So, I threw myself on the ground, and I kicked and screamed, and I kept it up for half an hour. Well, when I was done, and quite tired actually, I came over and found her sitting in a chair, calm. Well, I got up and I took something from her plate and she slapped my hand, so I pinched her right back. Well, this went on for quite a while. In the end, the dishes were thrown all over the room. There was food everywhere. But I ended the meal by sitting at the table, eating with a spoon for the first time in my life. And in the end, I folded my napkin. Well, my parents were watching outside the window, and they thought this was a miracle. They thought, oh, that's all we need. Thank you so much. They wanted me to be civil. That was all. But that's not what Annie had in mind. Annie had a lot more in mind for me than just civility. She wanted me to learn. To learn how to read, to learn about the world, and so all day long she would do the same thing. I have no idea what she was doing. She would take my hand and she would play this finger game. She would make these bizarre, weird shapes into my hands like that. I had no idea what she was doing. I had no idea. All day long she did that. She would do that in my hand and she would give me my doll. She would do that in my hand and then she would take me and she would give me a piece of chocolate cake. It made no sense to me. I had no idea what it was that she was doing. Until one day. One day, my day turned from darkness into light. We were out by the water pump in the yard, and teacher placed my hand under the spout, and she let the cool stream gush over my hand, and then she spelled slowly into my hand, W-A-T-E-R, slowly and then rapidly. I stood still, my whole attention fixed upon the motions of her fingers. Suddenly, I felt like a misty consciousness broke through, a thrill of returning thought, and the mystery of language became opened up to me. I'm not sure what made me understand that she was teaching me a language. In the very first moment, she arrived at my house. And finally, because the water was going over my hand and she was spelling this, finally I got it. Well, I knew what water meant. I knew it was the wonderful, cool something that was flowing over my hand. And that living word awakened my soul. And it gave me light and hope and joy. That moment set me free. And then I was wild to find out what everything was. I went from the porch. I went from the water fountain over to the porch. And I hit, spell that. I went to a tree. Spell that. I went to my mother. Got her face. Spell that. I was wild. I couldn't wait to hear what everything had a name. Because I was 7 years old, some people say that I was brilliant or that I was a genius. But I finally understood what things meant. Well, I was so excited to make sense of my world. Now, once I started to learn, there was no stopping me. Everything changed for me that day at the water pump, especially my countenance. A countenance is the way your face looks. And the next day when I got up, Annie said I looked like a radiant fairy. I flitted from object to object, making the name of everything, and I just kissed Annie for the very gladness, because she had given me the key to open up my world. After only 1 month, this 21-year-old woman had transformed my entire life. Now, my beloved teacher and I lived in our own... I skipped this part, excuse me. After a while, Annie discovered that my parents were rescuing me all the time. When there would be some sort of commotion, I would not behave, and Annie would make me behave, my mother would feel sorry for me and come in and rescue me and take me away. Well, Annie said to my parents that that would not work any longer. She wanted to have me alone. So what they did was they went to a cottage about a quarter mile away, and they fixed it all up, and then they took me on a long horse and buggy ride. Sometimes it's not that hard to fool a blind and a deaf girl. They rode 3 hours around, and we got to this little cottage. And that is where Annie taught me. And that is where my parents could come and watch during a certain hour during the day, but I could never know they were there. They could look in through the windows, and they could watch Annie and I do our work. I remember every night going to bed exhausted from either fighting with Annie or understanding what was going on and not understanding exactly until the water incident. And then from then on, I didn't want to go to sleep. I just wanted to stay awake all day and tell me more, tell me more. And this was my hand. Well, I was like an eager little baby. And just a few months, in a few months, I had over several hundred words. One day, teacher brought me to a nest where the chicken eggs were hatching. Teacher explained what was going on in my hand, and then she put an egg right into my hand, and I felt a baby chick being born into my hand. I tell you that every single nerve ending was on tippy toe, and I was just waiting and feeling birth happening in my very hand. Well, the next day I found a piglet, a brand new baby piglet, and I asked her, where was the egg that this piglet came from? She said, not everything comes from eggs, Helen. Well, one time an exciting thing happened. I went to Annie and I found my teacher and I spelled into her hand, dog, baby, five. And I got to take my teacher to the pump house and show her where there were five newborn puppies. Right there, I got to teach my teacher something. It was very exciting. There were no more tantrums. I was completely alive, and I was so glad to be. After After my education began, the world within me came to reach, and it came alive. I spelled often to my blocks, and I spelled to the dogs. The dogs didn't seem to get a lot out of it, but I would take their paws and I would just spell into it, because dogs were very special to me. Dogs were around me and communicated with me better than people before I learned my language. So I love dogs. I also, when I would be out in the garden and would pick a flower, I would then apologize to the plant and say, I'm sorry if that hurt, I didn't mean to hurt you. I would spell to everyone. I would just talk to everyone. Dogs and blocks and flowers. It was such an exciting life. In a few months, I learned to write. And I wrote to my cousin named Anna. My progress amazed everyone who knew me, even those relatives who urged my parents to put me away because I was a mental defective were impressed. But my uncle never gave my teacher, as he called her, that Yankee girl, any of the credit. The first summer of my world with language, I was given the gift of Braille. There was a Frenchman, his name was Louis Braille. He was sightless from age 3, and he developed an alphabet for the blind in 1826. It was not long before I read all the books the teacher had brought. Now, because teacher was writing to the head of the Perkins School for the Blind in Boston about me on a regular basis, news of my progress spread way beyond Alabama. Boston newspapers began to write of my story. It was very funny when they would tell me what they said, because often they were exaggerated. I was not a genius. I was just a caterpillar who had finally found my own wings. The director of the Perkins School for the Blind invited teacher to come with me and visit. What an opportunity to meet children who were like me for the first time in my life. I'd never met another blind child, or a deaf child, or a child who was blind and deaf. During the exciting train trip, teacher tapped out what we were seeing out the window, and she would say that there was a flock of sheep or cotton fields or farmers in the field, and they all fascinated me. And on our way, we stopped to see my friend, Mr. Alexander Graham Bell. Now, Bell devoted much of his life to helping the handicapped and was surprised to discover how well I could communicate. We were becoming good friends with Dr. Bell. And he said that my achievement is without parallel in the education of the deaf. His comments were given to the press, which added to my fame. In fact, even the president asked to meet me. So we went to see Mr. Grover Cleveland, who lives in a very large white house. Mr. Cleveland said he was glad to meet me. But when we arrived at the Perkins School, I was elated. Even more than visiting with this president of the United States, because it's one thing to have adults make a fuss over you, but how much more to meet someone who was really like you. What a joy to talk to other children in my own language. Until then, I had been like a foreigner, speaking through an interpreter, but now it was like I was in my own country. The Perkins Library contained the largest collection of books for the blind in the whole United States. And I pounced upon them eagerly. Teacher could hardly keep up with my endless requests for information. How I loved that first visit to Perkins. Now, some of the writings of me made me out to seem kind of supernatural. The director of the Perkins School called me the 8th wonder of the world, if you can believe it. And even Queen Victoria of England was familiar with me by a writing that she saw by Alexander Graham Bell. He'd written in a magazine. By the time that I was just 12 years old, my name was familiar to people all around the world. I've spoken about my childhood with lots of detail, but the rest of my life I want to tell you in a bit of broader brushstrokes. When it came time for me to think about college, I had a lot to consider. My education had consisted primarily of the world filtered through Annie's hand into my hand. Also, some brief periods at the Perkins School and all the books my fingers could digest. Now, Radcliffe was the most difficult school for a young woman to enter, and therefore it was the most appealing to me. I entered the Cambridge School at age 16 to try to prepare for the entrance exams to Radcliffe. Let me give you an example of what it took to get into Radcliffe during those days. This was the question they asked about English. See how well you would do. Write a paragraph on Silas Marner. You had to know who all these characters were and what stories they came from. Write a paragraph on Silas Marner. Also write one on the coming of Epi, on the death of Gabriel, and tell the story of the Merchant of Venice, showing many and what stories are interwoven into it. How would you have done on that exam? Well, I passed with flying colors. And finally, Radcliffe very reluctantly admitted me because they didn't want a girl who was so much trouble to come to their school. I was admitted in the year 1900. Now, when I was at Radcliffe, there was no special consideration for me at all. There certainly were no handicap ramps, let me tell you. So here's what I would do. I would go to class and sit down next to Annie. And Annie would listen to the lecture and spell it as many words as she could into my hands very quickly. I could write nothing down, but I would try to remember all that I could and then go back to my room as fast as I could and type it out on my Braille typewriter. That was how I did college. I finished in 4 years. I hear that sometimes students take longer than that today. During my college years, I was approached by the Ladies Home Journal to write a story of my life. I was petrified to write. I felt so inadequate, but I was encouraged by my beloved teacher, and I began work on articles that came out. Later, they became a book. Maybe you've seen it. It's called The Story of My Life by Helen Keller, and it still is read in 50 languages today. I did earn excellent grades when I did finish in 4 years at Radcliffe. Not bad for a blind and deaf young woman. My college education, though, was very expensive. And finally, it was Mark Twain and Alexander Graham Bell who organized a fund to pay for most of my college. Although Radcliffe was most reluctant to admit me in the beginning, I don't feel that they regret it today. I was blessed to meet in my life some of the finest people that were alive. You will note when I read their names that most of them are male. Because in my day, most of the people of power and influence were men. But I hear that that is changing somewhat today, which is good. I had the privilege of meeting Mark Twain, Andrew Carnegie, Alexander Graham Bell, as I mentioned before, Carl Sandburg, the Rockefellers, Henry Ford, many famous actors and actresses, Albert Einstein, George Bernard Shaw, Winston Churchill, and Eleanor Roosevelt and I were particularly good friends. I also had the privilege of going and seeing each president that I was alive from six on. Without the help of these amazing people, I never would have been able to do my work, which was to raise money and raise consciousness for the blind and the deaf. I am greatly indebted to these wise people. But none of these people, these famous people that you know of, none of them touched my life like my beloved teacher, Annie Sullivan. Can you imagine the energy it took for Annie to sit next to me and filter the entire world into my hands? I can't imagine how much energy it took for her to do that. And you know, Annie was not well herself. She had surgery on her eyes countless times during our relationship. She was sick herself and many times just had to go and lie down from the headache that she would get from using her eyes. The most painful times in my life were unquestionably when Annie was ill. And my beloved Annie did die at age 70 in the year 1936. These were her last words. She said, "I wanted to be loved. I was lonesome, and then Helen came into my life. I wanted her to love me, and I loved her. Thank God I gave up my life that Helen might live. God help her to live without me when I go. It is hard for me to even understand how two people could love each other more and help each other more in life than Annie and I did. And when she died, I tell you that the light and the music, the glory and the life had been withdrawn from me. It was hard to go on after that. but I did keep going. There was a woman by the name of Polly Thompson who had been working with Annie and me as a secretary for years, and she now became my traveling companion, helping me to continue my life of writing, speaking, and fundraising for the blind and the deaf. I'll tell you one of my greatest disappointments in my life. One of my greatest dreams was never realized. Despite enormous effort and the help of many people, I never learned to speak clearly. Thomas Edison once said that hearing me talk was hearing, it was like hearing steam exploding. The only people who could understand me were the children. They could understand what I had to say. Although I could not speak well, that never stopped me. I had many speaking tours all around the world. The most successful ones were ones where Annie would accompany me, and after I would speak for a few minutes, she would interpret for me. As always, we were quite an unbeatable team. Let me tell you a bit about my faith. Now, Annie had no religion at all, but my faith in God was very deep and pervasive in all of my life. When I was 16 years old, I met a great man to me. His name was Swedenborg, and he was a Swedish mystic. He taught that life basically got down to the three essences of God, and they were love, wisdom, and courage. That God essentially, and life got down to love, wisdom, and courage. Now, the spiritual world was not hard for me to understand. For people who cannot see and cannot hear, the spiritual world makes sense because we can't see and hear anything. For you, the spiritual world is hard to grasp, but for me, it made complete sense. To think about life without spirituality, without God, would be like thinking of a body without a beating heart. It made so much sense to me. My faith in God enabled, emboldened, and empowered me to live my life the way I did. Now, over my lifetime, I lived a very happy and I lived an abundant life. People said that there was a sparkle and a joy in my eyes that they had never encountered. I loved life. I loved people. I loved visiting the hospital. In fact, those were my favorite memories in all my life, was visiting people who were sick in the hospital. I continued to be mentally alert well into my 80s. I read my favorite books every day, which were the Bible and poetry and philosophy. I always had at least one dog, often many more, which I had a love with in my dark childhood when people did not understand me. Every day I would get up and stroll in my garden, every morning stroking the flowers as Annie and I had done in Tuscumbia, Alabama, 80 some years earlier. I died on June 1st, quietly. 1968, I was 88 years old, and my ashes were placed alongside Annie Sullivan's. During my life, I had learned to swim, to ride a bicycle, and a horse. I'd written several books, and I met world leaders and lovely common folks. Once, I flew in an open cockpit airplane. I never shrank back from danger. I said, life is either a daring adventure or it is nothing at all. Life is either a daring adventure or it is nothing at all. Thank you for coming to hear about my life. My hope is that hearing about my life, you will be empowered to live your life more fully. The end. Are there any questions for Helen? From anyone. Yes.
Well, at my school in Seattle, I think I heard some of this story.
Uh-huh.
And I wasn't gonna come, but I'm glad I came.
Oh, I'm glad. Thank you. We can always learn more, even something we've heard before. Any other questions for Helen? Yes.
Did Anne Sullivan have a life of her own, or was she 24 hours?
Well, Annie Sullivan did have a life of her own. She did get married at one point. But actually, from the things that I have read, Annie's relationship with Helen was so tight that the husband felt like he wasn't a part of it. So they ended up scandalously divorcing in those days. Interestingly enough, Helen fell in love with a man too, and her parents found out about by reading it in the paper when they went and applied for their wedding license, and they became enraged, and they came and got her and took her back to Alabama. She was living in Boston, and the man came to see her, and her parents felt that he was only seeking wealth, which she had some for a short period in her life, and then she actually died quite poor. And he was reaching for fame and for wealth, and they forbid her to marry him. His name was Peter. So still quite controlling, the Southern parents. Other questions?
Did she have an affiliation when she was doing this fundraising? So she was fundraising for most of her life.
She did. She fundraised from, I would say, there was a period in there where she was a socialist, and she kind of, I don't always, this is Holden Village, we can talk about it up here though. I don't always talk about that because she kind of fell out of the darling status for a while when she became quite radical in her politics and thought that socialism was a more Christian way to deal with people than our form of government. But she raised what is the important one for the blind? What's that society called? Pardon?
The school is more than that.
But what is the, anyway, she raised for the American, which are now today the American Association for the Deaf, and she raised millions of dollars. No one has ever equaled her. And interestingly enough, I have learned since doing her for a few years that deaf and blind people are not always that fond of her. And that is partially, I think, because they are now expected to be like her, and she was so extraordinary. You know, I mean, to think about that, she was not only courageous, riding in an open air plane. I wouldn't do that. I mean, that's incredible what she did. Learning to ride a bike. I mean, think about that, or the things she did. She was not only courageous, but she was brilliant, and she literally read 3/4 of the Perkins Library. She would stay up many times. Annie would come in and say, "It's 3:30 in the morning," and she would just say, "Please just let me finish this chapter." I mean, she just was insatiable with her knowledge. And she, well, you have to come look at the pictures. And, you know, I think about Radcliffe. I can't imagine listening for 1 or 2 or 3 hours. I mean, so much that she would have to go back and just type whatever she could remember. Mm-hmm. And it's incredible to look at the look on her face in her 80s. She was alive, capital A, in a way that many of us who are spoiled by being sighted and having hearing did not. She also could understand. She could pick out the kind of rose by the smell. Her, you know, if you've lost 2 of your 5 senses, her smell, her sense of smell was so acute, she could tell you the variety of rose it was by the smell of it. Incredible. Well, thank you so much. Tomorrow we will hear from Sojourner Truth, a very great American preacher. So thank you for coming. If you have more questions, I'd be glad. Be sure to come up and see the pictures. And thank you for coming.